Chapter 31. Tables Turned. Insider trading, slang term for internal narrative manipulation, illegal since 1932, and contrary to item B17G of the Narrative Continuity Code, this self-engineered plot fluctuation is so widespread within the book world that it is dealt with on a discretionary basis to enable it to be enforced at all. Small manipulations such as dialogue violations are generally ignored, but larger unlicensed plot adjustments are aggressively investigated. The most publicized flaunting of these rules was by Heathcliff when he burned down Wuthering Heights. Fined and sentenced to 150 hours community service within Green Eggs and Ham, Heathcliff was just one of many high-profile cases that jurisfiction were prosecuting at that time. Cat, formerly known as Cheshire. Guide to the Great Library. Glossary. I had underestimated Tweed or the power he wielded in the book world. Until then, I don't think I'd realized just how far they would warp the narrative to realize their ambitions. I was standing there gaping like an idiot when Heap grasped me painfully by the arm and twisted it around, pushing me into a bookcase as he did so. "I'd be ever so humbly sorry about this, Miss Next," he whined, the misspelling having gone deeper than his skin and rotted his very soul. "Imagine me, an 87 arrest in a pretty outlander such as yourself." His breath smelt rotten. I breathed through my mouth to avoid gagging. He reached in for my travel book and took the opportunity to slide his hand across my breast. I struggled harder, but to no avail. "That head's not mine," I shouted, realizing how stupid it sounded straight away. "That is one thing we are certain of," replied Tweed quietly. "Why did you kill him?"
"I didn't. It's Snell's," I said somewhat uselessly. "He bought it for use in his next book and asked me to keep it for him."
"Snell, insider trading. Any other ills you'd like to heap on the dead?"
"I don't think that's very likely."
"And how did it turn out to be Godot's? Coincidence?"
"I'm being framed," I replied. "Godot's head in a bag in my closet? Isn't that a chapter ending too slick to be anything but an engineered dramatic moment?"
I stopped. I had been told many times by my spec ops instructors that the biggest mistake anyone can make in a high-stress situation is to act too fast and say too much before thinking. I needed time. A commodity that was fast becoming a rarity.
"We have evidence of her involvement in at least three other murders, Mr. Bellman," said Tweed.
The bellman sighed and shook his head sadly as I was relieved of my travel book and handcuffed to three anvils to stop me jumping out.
"Havisham?"
he asked with a tremor in his voice.
"We believe so," replied Tweed.
"They're fooling you, Mr. Bellman, sir," I said, trying to sound as normal as I could. "Something is badly wrong with Ultraword."
"That something is you next," spat Tweed. "Four jurisfiction agents dead in the line of duty, and Dean nowhere to be found."
"I can't believe it. You'd kill your own mentor?"
"Steady, Tweed," said the bellman,
drawing up a chair and looking at me sadly.
"Havisham vouched for her, and that counts for something."
"Then let me educate you, Mr. Bellman," said Tweed, sitting on the corner of a table. "I've been making a few inquiries. Even discounting Godot, there is more than enough evidence of Next's perfidy."
"Evidence?" I scoffed. "Such as what?"
"Does the code word Sapphire mean anything to you?"
"Of course."
"Only 8 jurisfiction agents had access to the Sword of the Zenobians," said Tweed. "And 4 of them are dead. It's hardly a smoking gun, is it?"
"Not on its own," replied Tweed carefully. "But when we add other facts, it starts to make sense. Bradshaw and Havisham eject from Zenobians, leaving you all alone with Snell. They arrive a few minutes later, and he is mortally misspelled."
"Very neat, very clever."
"Why?" I asked. "Why would I kill Miss Havisham? Why would I want to kill any of these people?"
"Ambition."
"What ambition? All I want to do is have my child and go home."
"The bellman's job,"
announced Tweed like a hidden trump. As an outlander, you have seniority, but only after Bradshaw, Havisham, Perkins, Dean, and me. Bradshaw has been the bellman already, so that rules him out. Were you going to kill me next? I have no ambition to be the bellman, and didn't kill Miss Havisham, I muttered, trying to think of a plan of action. Tweed leaned closer. You've been using jurisfiction as a springboard to feed your own burning ambition. It's a dangerous thing to possess. Ambition will sustain for a while, and then it kills indiscriminately. The bellman, who up until this moment had been quiet, suddenly said,
I'll need more proof than your say-so, Mr. Tweed.
Indeed, replied Tweed triumphantly. As you know, the three witches have to log all their prophecies. They don't like to do it, but they have to. No paperwork, no license to read chicken entrails, simple as that. He pulled a sheet of paper from his pocket. The day after Miss Next arrived, they filed this report. He handed the paper to the bellman. Read the third on the list.
Prophecy 3, read the bellman slowly. Thou shalt be bellman thereafter.
Tweed retrieved the sheet of paper and slid it across the table to me. Do you deny this?
No, I said glumly.
We call it Macbeth syndrome, said the bellman sadly. An insane desire to fulfil your own prophecies is nearly always fatal, sadly, not only for the sufferer.
I'm not a Macbeth sufferer, Mr. Bellman, and even if I am, shouldn't even the smallest error in Ultraword be looked at?
There aren't any errors, put in Tweed. Ultraword is the finest piece of technology we have ever devised, foolproof, stable, and totally without error. Tell me the problem. I'm sure there is a satisfactory explanation.
Well, I stopped myself. I knew the bellman was still an honest man. Should I tell him about the thrice-read problem and risk Tweed covering his tracks even? On reflection, probably not. The more I dug, the more would be found against me. I needed breathing space. I needed to escape.
What's to become of me?
Permanent expulsion from the book world, replied Tweed. We don't have enough evidence to convict, but we do have enough to have you banned from fiction forever. There is no appeals procedure. I only have to ratify it with the bellman.
Well, said the bellman, tingling his bell sadly,
I must concur with Tweed's recommendation. Search her for any Bookworld accessories before we send her back.
You're making a mistake, Mr. Bellman, I said angrily. A very...
Ooh,
said Heap, who had been rummaging in my pockets and taking the opportunity to try to touch my breasts again.
Look what I found!
It was the suddenly a shot rang out plot device Snell had given me at the Slaughtered Lamb.
A plot device, Miss Next, said Tweed, taking the small glass globe from Heap. Do you have any paperwork for this?
No. It's evidence. I just forgot to sign it in.
Illegal carriage of all narrative-turning devices is strictly illegal.
Are you a dealer?
Who's your source? Peddle this sort of garbage in teenage fiction?
Blow it out of your arse, Tweed.
What did you say? You heard me.
He went crimson and might have hit me, but all I wanted was for him to move close enough for me to kick him. Or his hand, at least.
You piece of crap, he sneered. I've known you were no good from the moment I saw you.
Think you're something special, Miss Spec Ops Outlander Supremo.
At least I don't work for the Skyrail, Tweed. Inside fiction, you're a big cheese, but out in the real world, you're less than a nobody.
It had the desired effect. He took a step closer.
And I kicked out, connected with his hand, and the small glass globe went sailing into the air, high above our heads.
Heap, coward that he now was, dived for cover. But Tweed and the Red Queen, wary of a narrative-turning device going off in a confined area, tried to catch it. They might have been successful if just one of them had attempted it. As it was, they collided with a grunt, and the small glass globe fell to the floor and shattered as they looked on helplessly.
Suddenly, a shot rang out. I didn't see where it came from, but felt its full effect. The bullet hit the chain that was holding me to the anvils, shattering it neatly. I didn't pause for breath. I was off and running towards the door.
I didn't know where I was heading. Without my travel book, I was trapped, and Sense and Sensibility was not that big. Tweed and Heap were soon on their feet, only to hit the floor again as a second volley followed the first. I ducked through the door and came upon Vernon Dean. Pistol in hand. Heap and Tweed returned fire as Dean holstered his pistol and took both my hands.
"Hold tight," he said, "and empty your mind. We're going to go abstract."
I cleared my mind as much as I could and... The jurisdiction office vanished and was replaced by a large and shiny underground tube. It was big enough to stand up in, but even so I had to keep pressed against the wall as a constant stream of words flashed past in both directions. Above us, another pipe was leading upwards, and every now and then a short stream of words were diverted into this small conduit.
"Where are we?"
I asked, my voice echoing about the steel walls.
"Somewhere quite safe," replied Dean. "They'll be wondering where you went."
"We're in the outland? I mean home?"
Dean laughed.
"No, silly. We're in the footnotophone conduits."
I looked at the stream of messages again.
"We are?"
"Sure. Come on. Let me show you something."
We walked along the pipe until it opened out into a bigger room, a hub where messages went from one genre to another. The exits closest to me were marked crime, romance, thriller, and comedy, but there were plenty more, all routing the footnotophone messages towards some subgenre or other.
"It's incredible," I breathed.
"Oh, this is just a small hub," replied Dean. "You should see the bigger ones. It all works on the ISBN number system, you know, and the best thing about it is that neither Text Grand Central nor the Council of Genres know that you can get down here. It's sanctuary Thursday. Sanctuary away from the prying eyes of jurisfiction and the rigidity of the narrative."
I caught his eye. "Tweed thinks you killed Perkins, Snell, and that serving girl." He stopped walking and sighed. "Tweed is working with Text Grand Central to make sure Ultra Word is launched without any hitches. He knew I wanted to conduct more tests. He offered me a plot realignment in the Squire of Hypotenuse to garner my support."
"He tried to buy you?"
"When I refused, he threatened to kill me. That's why we escaped."
"We?"
"Of course. The maidservant that I ravage in Chapter 8 and then cruelly cast into the night. She dies of tuberculosis and I drink myself to death. Do you think we could allow that?"
"But isn't that what happens in most Farquhar novels? Maidservant ravaged by cruel squire?"
"You don't understand, Thursday. Mimi and I are in love."
"Ah," I replied slowly, thinking of Landon.
"That can change things."
"Come,"
said Dean, beckoning me through the hub and dodging the footnotophone messages. "We have made our home in a disused branch line. After Wolfe wrote to the lighthouse and Mrs. Dalloway, the Council of Genres thought Stream of Consciousness would be the next detective. They built a large hub to support the rackloads of novels that never appeared." We turned into a large tunnel, about the size of the underground back in Swindon, and the messages whizzed back and forth, almost filling the tube to capacity. After a few hundred yards, we came to another hub and took the least used, barely two or three messages a minute buzzed languidly past, and these seemed to be lost. They moved around vaguely for a moment and then evaporated. The sides of the tube were less shiny. Rubbish had collected at the bottom and water leaked in from the roof. Every now and then we passed small, unused offshoots, built to support books that were planned but never written.
"Why did you come for me, Vern?"
"Because I don't believe you would kill Miss Havisham. And I love stories as much as anyone. Ultra Word is flawed, and I'm not going to see it dominate the book world if I can help it."
The tunnel opened out into a large chamber where a settlement of sorts had been built from rubbish and scrap wood, items that could be removed from the book world without anyone noticing. The buildings were little more than tents with the orange flicker of oil lamps from within.
"Vern!"
A dark-haired woman waved at him from the nearest tent. She was heavily pregnant, and Dean rushed up to hug her affectionately. I watched them with a certain degree of jealousy. I noticed I had placed my hand on my own tum quite subconsciously. I sighed and pushed it to the back of my mind.
"Mimi, this is Thursday," said Vern.
I shook her hand and she led us into their tent, offering me a small wooden box to sit on that I noticed had once been used to held past tenses.
"So what's wrong with Ultra Word?"
I asked, my curiosity overcoming me.
"Flawed by the need for control," he said slowly.
"Think the book world is overregulated?
Believe me, it's an anarchist's dream world compared to the future seen by TGC.
And so, as quickly as possible, he told me exactly what he had discovered. The problem was, I needed something more than his theories. To do battle with Tweed and TGC, I needed proof.
Proof, said Dean. Yes, that was always the problem. Let me show you what Perkins left us.
He returned with a birdcage containing a skylark and set it upon the table. I looked at the bird and the bird looked back.
This is the proof?
So Perkins said.
Do you have any idea what he meant?
None at all, Dean sighed. He was Minotaur shit long before he tried to explain it to any of us. I leaned forward for a closer look and smelt.
Cantaloupes. It's Ultra Word, I breathed.
It is? Echoed Dean in surprise.
How can you tell?
It's an outlander thing. I have a plan. But to do it, I have to be at liberty and free from the Bellman's suspicions.
I can arrange that, Dean smiled.
Come on, let's do this thing before it gets any worse.
How odd, said Tweed, walking to the place he had last seen Thursday. He knew she couldn't jump without her book, but something was wrong. She had vanished, not with the fade-out of a standard book jump, but an instantaneous departure. Heap and the bellman joined him. Heap with a bookhound on a leash who sniffed the ground and whimpered and yelped noisily, chops slobbering.
No scent, said the bellman in a puzzled tone. No destination signature. Harris, what's going on?
I don't know, sir. With your permission, I'd like to set up textual sieves on every floor of the Great Library. Heap will be your personal bodyguard from now on. Next is quite clearly insane and will try to kill you. I have no doubt about that. Do I have your permission to apply for an extremely prejudicial termination order from the Council of Genres?
No. That is one step I am not prepared to take.
Order the death of an outlander?
Not I.
Tweed made to move off, but the bellman called him back.
Tweed, Thursday said there was a problem with Ultra Word.
Do you think we should contact Tex Grand Central and delay its release?
You mean you take all this seriously, sir?
Exclaimed Tweed in a shocked tone.
Excuse me for being so blunt, but next is a murderer and a liar. How many more people does she have to kill before she's stopped?
Ultra Word is bigger than all of us, said the bellman slowly. Even if she is a murderer, she still might have found something wrong. I cannot afford to take any risks over the new upgrade.
Well, we can delay, said Tweed slowly, but that would take the inauguration of the new operating system out of your term as bellman. If you think that is the best course of action, perhaps we should take it. But whichever bellman signs Ultra Word into law might be looked on favourably by history, do you not think?
The bellman rubbed his chin thoughtfully. What more tests could we do?
He asked at length. Tweed smiled. I'm not sure, sir. We fixed the flight manual conflict and debugged auto page turn deluxe. The raciness overheat problem has been fixed, and the Esperanto translation module is now working 100%. All these faults have been dealt with openly and transparently. We need to upgrade and upgrade now. The popularity of nonfiction is creeping up and we have to be vigilant.
Heap ran up and whispered in Tweed's ear.
That was one of our intelligence sources, sir. It seems that Next has been suffering from a mnemonomorph recently.
Great Scott! Gasped the bellman. She might not even know she'd done it.
It would explain that convincing act, added Tweed. A woman with no memory of her evil has no guilt. Now, do I have your permission to apply for an extremely prejudicial termination order?
Yes,
sighed the bellman, taking a seat.
Yes, you better had. An Ultra Word is to go ahead as planned. We have dithered enough.
We jumped back into the jurisdiction offices. Tweed and Heap were alone with the bellman, overseeing a document that I found out later was my termination warrant. I had Dean's gun pointed at Dean. He had his hands up. Heap and Tweed exchanged nervous glances.
"I've brought you Dean, bellman," I announced. "I had no other way of proving my innocence. Vern, tell them what you told me."
"Go to hell."
I whacked him hard on the back of the head with the butt of his pistol and he fell to the ground, momentarily stunned. Blood welled up in his hairline and I winced. Luckily, no one saw me.
"That's for Miss Havisham," I told him.
"Miss Havisham?"
echoed the bellman.
"Oh, yes," I replied. "Bastard."
Dean touched the back of his head and looked at his hand.
"Bitch," he muttered. "I'd have killed you too."
He turned and leapt at me with surprising speed, grasped me by the throat before I could stop him, and we both crashed to the floor, knocking over a table as we went. It was an impressive charade.
"The little slut-serving wench deserved to die," he screamed. "How dare she spoil the happy life that could have been mine?"
I couldn't breathe and started to black out. I had wanted it to look realistic, and so, I suppose, did he. Tweed placed a gun under Dean's chin and forced him off. He spat in my face as I lay there trying to get my breath back. Dean was then set upon by Heap, who took an unhealthy delight in beating him despite apologizing superciliously every time he struck him.
"Stop!" yelled the bellman. "Calm down, all of you!"
They propped the now bleeding Dean in a chair, and Heap bound his hands.
"Did you kill Perkins?"
asked the bellman, and Dean nodded sullenly.
"He was going to blow the whistle on me. Havisham too. Snell and Matthias just got in the way. Happiness should have been mine," he sobbed. "Why did the slut have to turn up with that little bastard? I should have married Miss O'Shaughnessy. All I wanted was something no evil squire in Farquhar ever gets."
"And what was that?"
asked the bellman sternly.
"A happy ending."
"Pitiful, wouldn't you say, Tweed?"
"Pitiful, yes, sir," he replied stonily, staring at me as I picked myself off the floor. The bellman tore up my termination order.
"It looks like we have underestimated you,"
he said happily.
"I knew Havisham couldn't be wrong. Tweed, I think you owe Miss Next an apology."
"I apologize unreservedly," replied Tweed, through gritted teeth.
"Good," said the bellman. "Now, Thursday, what's the problem with Ultra Word?"
It was a sticky moment. We had to take this higher than the bellman. With Libris and the whole of Tex Grand Central involved, there was no knowing what they would do. I remembered an error from an early Ultra Word test version. "Well," I began, "I think there is a flight manual conflict. If you read an Ultra Word book on an airship, it can play havoc with the flight manuals."
"That's been cured," said the bellman kindly. "But thank you for being so diligent."
"That's a relief. May I have some leave?"
"Of course. And if you find any other irregularities in Ultra Word, I want them brought to me and me alone."
"Yes, sir. May I?" I indicated my travel book.
"Of course. Very impressive job capturing Dean, don't you think, Tweed?"
"Yes," replied Tweed grimly. "Very impressive. Well done, Next." I opened my travel book and read myself to Solomon's outer office. Tweed wouldn't try anything at the C of G, and the following 3 days were crucial. Everything I needed to say to the bellman would have to wait until I had 7 million witnesses.